So, hello everyone, and it's another Friday here in hazy Singapore, and we're here with the Beyond the 90 podcast, powered by One Shot Football. Do you like that new intro, guys? And we're here at District 10, the home of Italian bistro food, with run and owned by Chef Luca Pizzera. Thank you, Luca, for hosting us today. And I'm your host, Steve McBain, and first up today, what a lineup we have. We've got not three, not four, but five pundits for you, and one of our pod regulars, Mr. Rick Overton. Rick, how are you?
Very good, thank you.
And how's your week in sport been, Rick? Lots of touchdowns, go-ahead scores and ties, or...?
Yeah, it's been very good, and good for results for Man U, and looking forward to talking about football and not American football.
Well, we'd love that. That would be a first, but you know, we'll see how that goes. Now, Mr. Drew O'Donnell, how are you?
Yeah, very glad to be back.
And and Rangers and Mark Warburton storming through the Scottish Championship?
Yeah, all the way up to the top this year. It's going to be fantastic. I've been watching it on my Rangers TV. Hopefully you'll get a link on your website.
Rangers TV. Well, new lows for us. But I guess, I mean, you know, off air you mentioned about the loss to St. Johnstone. I guess the key for Rangers this season is automatic promotion. There does seem to be a gap to the top level.
Yeah, I think they're missing about six players in total and into the squad. And hopefully that will get rectified between Christmas and next summer, because we're going to win the league at a canter. Probably by Christmas, take the whole of Christmas off, retire like yous boys.
Absolutely.
The
and then back to the big time, playing the likes of Kilmarnock and St. Johnstone. Now, Mr. Jeremy Searle, after a 5-week suspension, you're back in the pod. Welcome, Jeremy, how are you?
Hey, Steve, very good, thank you.
And it's been Back to the Future week, which we've all heard about. I mean, Jeremy, you're the only person in the pod who was in his 20s when the original film was set in 1955.
His teens, was it?
Okay, all right. 20s. And a great result for Spurs last night.
Yes, yeah. We'll discuss that later, Steve.
All right, now we have what everyone has been waiting for. It's a podcast first, just to prove how progressive and 21st century we are. We have a real live Arsenal fan, and even better, she's a lady. Gazelle Ohaka, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And Gazelle, you're an actress and voiceover artist. I mean, now you can add podcast pundit to your CV is complete.
I think that's exactly what I've been missing.
Perhaps. Exactly. Now, Gazelle, it's very traditional for us to welcome our new pundits by out them on which football team they support. We've obviously established you're an Arsenal fan, but why and for how long?
Well, I grew up in North London, and I'm actually sat next to Jeremy, who's a Spurs fan.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
And there's two Man United fans here as well. So I'm feeling quite uncomfortable, but I'm sure I'll manage.
You should.
I think the most uncomfortable person here is a Chelsea fan.
To be honest, I feel uncomfortable every week, but don't let that put you off.
So I grew up equidistant between two football teams. One is Spurs and the other one was Arsenal. My dad was an Arsenal fan, so I chose the better team.
We took the sensible choice.
I chose Arsenal for the best team. So how long have I been an Arsenal fan? Since 1990. So wow, that's 25
years. So basically in the success years of George Graham. So we're looking at a glory hunter, basically, right?
Quick maths. And my favourite Arsenal player of all time is Thierry Henry.
Thierry Henry. Okay, that sounds like a decent choice. Your worst Arsenal player of all time. And let me just say, you're not allowed to say David Ospina.
Almunia. But we're going to talk about goalkeepers later on.
We're going to talk about that a little bit more. Okay, well, I mean, it's been a fascinating week's news. I mean, last week it was all about Jurgen Klopp. He had his debut at White Hart Lane. It was a decent 0-0 draw, I suppose. But then, another draw against Rubin Kazan last night. I mean, how soon can we see some progress from him, Jeremy? And what are we seeing with his new Liverpool?
I think, obviously, to take over a new team, it's going to be very difficult for the manager and the players to start with. Going to White Hart Lane for your first game in charge, a couple of years ago, that's probably a good chance to win. Nowadays, it's not exactly a fortress, but it's a bit harder to get points from Tottenham these days. I mean, Man City know
fortress.
That. Fortress? 4-1. I said it's not quite a fortress.
Never heard White Hart Lane.
You were going into that game, though. You were the favourite.
So, yes, we were the favourites. That's what I say. He's going to be happy with the result.
There's a lot of empty nights in White Hart Lane. That's where they call it a fortress.
But what have we seen from Klopp's Liverpool so far? Well, what's different?
I mean, Brendan Rodgers played a sort of pressing game, but it wasn't so intense. Klopp has the same sort of, style. He wants his players to be a lot more in harder pushing game, a lot more intensity in the game.
But less possession based, I guess? Or?
I think so, yeah. Less possession based. You know, the guys, I mean, one of the stats from the game, Liverpool ran 116 kilometres against Spurs 114.8. And that's probably the first time this season Spurs have been outrun in a game, in distance covered by the players.
There you have it, Jeremy Searle, the stat monster.
Stats all. But I mean, you look at the Liverpool team; they're out. The three of their first team strikers weren't available. I mean, Benteke, Sturridge, Ings, all out. So we had to play with a 20-year-old Belgian striker, very limited experience in the Premier League. So I think getting the draw and not conceding is better than hoped for.
Well, they'll have a tough game against Southampton this week. One of the things I found most interesting was, I mean, Brendan Rodgers was very synonymous with standing on the touchline with his right hand in there, and I thought it was quite ironic they've replaced him with a German. But anyway, we probably won't go down that road. But anyway, I mean, Gazella, Arsenal, it's been a big week for the Gunners. I mean, a routine home victory against Bayern Munich, but hey, a big away winner, you know, against Watford.
Yes.
It's a good time to be an Arsenal fan.
It's an amazing time to be an Arsenal fan. It just couldn't be more exciting. I think we've had a win against Man United in such a stylish, quick, fast-paced way, and then we beat Watford by, you know, waiting it out for an hour and then getting our victory, and then against Bayern Munich, where we had hardly any possession. Bayern Munich had like 69% of possession, and we were hitting them on the counter, and we looked dangerous. It was amazing. So I think what's changed is, Jeremy wants to say something.
I'd like to say, I think the whole game was decided on goalkeepers. I think Peter Cech was outstanding, making some great saves. Neuer made one mistake, and that was it. Arsenal win. And that was it.
I think what happened was that Arsenal haven't been very good at big games. And that's in recent years, okay. Let's say. And against Man City, they put in a sterling performance. And against Bayern Munich, and even against Manchester United, it's just this big game nervousness that we've been somehow.
But this is the thing with Arsenal. I mean, no one would ever doubt that they've always had the ability. Do you think they've now got the character to go on and challenge for the title?
I think they've actually addressed the balance. So before it was just like, you know, we're always focused on the offensive players and like being more attacking in our play. But actually, having the defensive discipline, you know, in these big games was something that, yes, the goalkeeper did have a key part to play, with Cech making four really good saves, and that kept us in the game. But I think it all across the back four, and Cech having that authority, you know, just having that influence over the defence. And, you know, we just seem like a different team now.
In the last five or six games, the one game that Ospina played with a 3-2 against Olympiacos, they've scored 15 goals and have had three against. So that's some record out of five out of six games. Unfortunately, it was against Man U, but since Cech gave some money back to Chelsea by throwing the game.
I think the referee threw that game.
I mean, I think it's...
sent off the wrong man.
Bait!
I think you know, Jeremy makes a point about a goalkeeper, and I think it's a very good one. And for me as a Chelsea fan, Courtois, it was the right decision to move Cech on and bring Courtois. And he's a young keeper, obviously, you know, FFP, whatever the reasons were, it was the right decision. I think Courtois is probably a better shot stopper than Cech. But if you look at all Chelsea's defensive problems, they've started since Cech effectively stopped playing. The defence does not have the same
confidence
in Courtois, and certainly not in Begovic. And you can see now with Cech, his influence, he's starting to push the players further
he's
up.
He's a leader. He has a very strong influence on the back.
You know, he's a very, very strong guy, and it's you know, Arsenal were really criticised for not buying an outfield player, but I think, you know, we're really starting to see the influence of Cech now. So, Gazella, put you on the spot, are Arsenal going to win the league?
Yeah, I think so.
You think so? I have a really horrible feeling Manchester United are going
to
win.
I'd just like to point something out. Even though Arsenal beat Bayern Munich, they're still bottom of their group.
That's true, but everybody else is on... We're on three points. Olympiacos.
Well, I think
Zagreb's got three. Olympiacos.
If you look at the Champions League groups, I mean, none of the English clubs are particularly well placed, but none of them are out of it. I mean, I think with Arsenal, they should beat Zagreb at home, which means they probably have to go to Olympiacos and win.
And get something, yeah.
The worst outcome for Arsenal is finishing third. Because that, you know, dropping down into the Europa League, I think, you know, Chelsea, I think that was a decent point for them. Manchester United looked quite well placed. And I thought for City, that was, I mean, Rick, I don't know what you think, but I thought that was not a coming of age performance, it's a bit dramatic, but that's the kind of game that City wouldn't have won before. Beating Sevilla, you know, they had to grind it out. You know, yeah. It was a late goal from De Bruyne. It's a good result, yeah?
Well, the thing with City, and it's almost a point with Arsenal too, City's got some depth, so they're able, I mean, they're suffering a lot of injuries right now, and they still come up with a result. Now, Arsenal right now, they're doing extremely well, but what I question about Arsenal is a couple of injuries, and do they really have the depth to become contenders, to carry on in the Champions League and challenge for the title? I don't think Arsenal has the depth. They're a fantastic team on the first team basis, but do they have the depth and the quality to challenge in both the Champions League and the Premiership? I don't think so. City, I think, does.
I think slightly differently. I think in a cup game, it's a cup competition, so you can get away with a less deeper squad. I think they're more likely to win the Champions League just by, as Gazelle said,
Arsenal
attacking on the break. But to win the Premier League, not a chance.
I mean, Gazella, yeah. Do you think this might be the season where Wenger finally bites the bullet? And, you know, for instance, if Arsenal are in good shape in January, which I think they will be, this is the most open Premier League I think we've seen. I mean, Manchester City are fallible. Manchester United are terrible, yet they keep winning. I mean, if it was just a big... if there was one, you know, good signing, a solid signing that Wenger could make in January, just for instance, just to shore up that midfield, do you think he would actually go and do it, or is he going to just stick to these stubborn guns that he has?
I think the thing with Arsene Wenger is that he just wants to get value for money, and I think in these times of big money and big spending high on wages, he's reluctant to do that.
He'll probably sell somebody.
No, I don't think he'll sell anybody.
But that isn't consistent with winning. You know, it's very admirable and, you know, very noble, but, you know, for all that everyone goes on about Barcelona and how they're the, you know, this wonderful team and UNICEF and the whole thing, they spent a fortune on Neymar, they spent a fortune on Suarez, and they're all up in court for tax dodging and the whole thing. I mean, you know, they pay the big bucks, they pay huge wages. I mean, Arsenal, you can't do this on the cheap, surely.
No, but then the transformation of the team has happened through the inadvertent discovery of players like Hector Bellerin, who only came into the team because Debuchy got injured.
That was a tough shift against Douglas Costa, by the way.
Definitely. What was that move?
That was pretty Ronaldinho-esque, I would suggest. But anyway,
skinned him quite a few times. But it, Hector Bellerin was the assist for the
assist. Call it the McBain. I'll get back.
I think the answer is no.
Francis Coquelin, he was an inadvertent discovery. He was on loan at Charlton Athletic, and he got brought back because Arteta was injured. So in terms of like nurturing the talent that we already have within the squad, I think that's what Wenger prefers. And look at Santi Cazorla, he's amazing now.
But at the same time, you stick a Vieira in that team. Mm. And
but that's what Francis Coquelin is.
That probably brings our Arsenal chat to a conclusion. Now,
bury it where it belongs.
Now, bearing in mind the inspiration from Coquelin, let's talk about Stoke. And you know, with Chelsea struggling so much, I've kind of pinned my colours to the Stoke mast. Now,
really?
They've got some quality players. They've got five Champions League winners in their team. Bojan's fit, Shaqiri's fit, Arnautovic is a beast of a player. They've got some really, really good players. I mean, they've won three on the bounce. I mean, guys...
But they've won three on the bounce by one goal margin.
Why are none of you excited about Stoke?
Because it's Stoke.
I am. Come on, they've got some great players.
Because Robbie Williams supports them.
No, he doesn't. He's not. No, he's Bradford.
That's Stoke. I'm pretty certain.
No, it's Stoke. Bradford. Is it? Absolutely,
100%. I'm going to Google
that. I'll just text him. It's fine. But you know, I mean, they've won three on the bounce. They've got another. They're home to Watford.
They've
got
three easy games coming up. Watford, Newcastle, then Chelsea. Yeah. That should be 9 points.
Especially the easy three from Chelsea.
But is it not good to see a team find? We've seen so many teams that have got themselves to mid-table. Then they try and take the next step. I mean, you could go back to Charlton. You know, when they got rid of Kurbishley. You know, they try and take that next step, and then invariably they trip and fall. I mean, is it not good to see someone actually trying to?
This season we have like Leicester and Crystal Palace and West Ham filling that gap as well. So it's not just Stoke who perform overperforming, should we say?
I like Mark Hughes, and obviously I like that he's got Charlie Adam in the team. I think he's a good player.
I think he's a criminal.
Yeah, well, okay, he's an assault merchant. Yeah, I'll give him that. But the problem is with Stoke, as in Leicester, as in.
Do we need an allegedly in there? Or?
Yes,
are we comfortable with that?
Contact your lawyers.
Yeah.
You might not even be listening to
Crystal Palace, etc.
Jeremy Searle, address to follow.
And they've got, I mean, these teams every year will have 5, 6, 7, maybe even 8 games, maybe less of the sort of, they break the rule here, but they have 6, 7, 8 games where they go on a run and then it's stabilised and then the wheels come off and away you go.
But I don't think Stoke has overperformed. I think they've underperformed at the start of the season. I'm with you, Steve. I think they're starting to play into their own now. Well, I think they've got a decent side.
As you mentioned earlier, Rick, they brought in quite a few new signings in the transfer window, and they're just starting to gel now. And so Steve,
well, they had some big injuries, and I think Ryan Shawcross as well is a big miss. I think once they get him at the back, I think then they can really kick on. But also they lost their keeper.
Well, Van Ginkle came in. What do you think of him as a player?
I think he should be in a Chelsea shirt, to be honest. I mean, I think we're short in central midfield, and this whole Chelsea loan thing, it's...
But I've also brought in Glenn Johnson from Liverpool, which is, although not my favourite player, very experienced defender. Who adds experience and stability, a long time in the Premiership, so I think he helps as well.
But for a long time, Stoke's problem wasn't actually their defence, it was their attacking ability, that they just couldn't score.
Well, Hughes is, has tried to, because that's the thing, I mean, this is what I was saying,
Winston is really an attacker,
when you had,
in disguise.
When you had, Charlton under Kurbishley, it was very different for the next person to come in. And I think trying to follow Tony Pulis at Stoke is a real big ad. And I think Mark Hughes is, I'm a Hughes fan as well. I think he's done an excellent job.
It's the right club for him, isn't
he? He seems to be, it's a bit Blackburnish. He was very good there as well.
He's a bit like Allardyce. He may be unfashionable.
He has a level and... Yeah. Okay, well, that's Stoke now. I mean, another club that's been really trying to sort of break into the higher echelons is Swansea. I big up these guys as well.
Really, Man United there, sorry.
Whoa. Controversial.
I'm a big Gary Monk fan. By all accounts, his training methods and things are excellent. They've got some really attractive players. But guys, since they beat Manchester United, I mean, 3 losses and 2 draws. I mean, are they in real trouble, or is it just a blip?
If you think about it, Swansea last year had exactly the same thing. They had 5 losses on the bounce. This, I think, is 6 in all competitions. But their actual losses have came in between the qualifiers for Europe. They've got about 6 players playing for who have just sort of got them qualified in Wales, England, Poland, Portugal, and maybe even Sweden on the bounce. So I think it's only a blip. And I think after 2 or 3 games, they'll go back on a run and probably finish sort of top half of the table.
I mean, Gazella, I presume there are 3 worse teams than Swansea in the league?
3 worst teams?
Chelsea, Man, they're not in relegation. trust me, I saw 2 of them at Stamford Bridge last week. But I mean, there must be... I mean, what I'm trying to say is I don't think Swansea are in relegation trouble, are they?
No, and they're happy with Gary Monk, aren't they?
Yeah. I think Gary Monk says it right when he says they're just going through a difficult moment.
Yeah,
I think they will bounce back.
He mentioned the qualifiers as if sort of most of his players were out playing them, and it is a distraction. that there isn't going to be any distraction now from Swansea between now and the end of the season. All the qualifiers are done.
Yeah, I really like Gary Monk. I'd like to be his friend, I think. But
he seems like a friendly bloke.
Does he want to be your friend?
He does.
Have you befriended them on Facebook?
Hopefully he's listening. But anyway, I mean, someone that no one is friends with is FIFA. I mean, now the election's been delayed until February, which I'm guessing is at the end of Platini's 90 days.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, 2 days.
Guys, I mean, have we got to the stage where we just don't care anymore, or
yes,
I don't agree. I don't care.
But we have to care. It's the world.
No,
game.
The dragon is out, and the more they drag it out, the more bad it goes on FIFA as an organization. Get these criminals out. Get someone
alleged,
new in.
Alleged criminals.
Yeah. Alleged criminals out. Yeah. Get some fresh people in. Get some fresh bodies in. You know, reinvent FIFA. I mean, I'm sick of Sepp Blatter. I'm sick of Platini. I'm sick of the crap. Get him out.
I mean, do we think, Gazella, I mean, this week, I mean, you know, it's looked like a post that has to be an administrator. I mean, you know, we've spoken about, you know, Prince Ali and, you know, to me, his only qualification is he's not Sepp Blatter. But I mean, Ramon Vega, the ex-Spurs defender, was linked this week. I mean, do you think it'd be a good idea to have an ex-footballer, you know, involved, maybe with a professional administrator or something? Or
I don't know. I think the problem is that the president almost has too much power, because where there's so much money and influence, and it's obviously going to be open for corruption. So how do you counter that? How can you
it's
put in
charity.
Safeguard?
That's why it's open for corruption.
It's a what?
It's a charity, so there's no board of directors to report to. You basically
but
write
you
it all
some
up.
But that's why it needs a complete change, a complete overhaul.
That's not, but that's what the. That's
and
why.
It's a football figurehead.
That's why the countries have to get involved. That's why they tell Switzerland, do you need to step in and remove it and make it more under nationalised?
It just seems so rotten. I mean, for instance, if you take us here in Singapore, I mean, which is one of the most, you know, corruption-free countries in the world, one of the reasons that's been mooted is that the civil servants here are just paid so much money. But yet, at FIFA, I mean, they were saying that Sepp Blatter, you know, paid himself $10 million last year, but yet there's still corruption on top of that. I don't understand the motivation. If you're getting paid so well that you then
did you
I
read
think
the
it's
article?
The opportunity though as well.
He wrote an article that he said the reason why he didn't pay, or he never wrote the article. He just spoke into the article. Spoke and the guy wrote the article. He said the reason he couldn't pay Platini what this 2 million Swiss francs was because the chief executive at FIFA only got paid 300,000 francs. Their 300,000 francs, therefore that was the reason why they didn't sign off on the 2 million check. Now he's paying himself 10 million US. He's contradicting himself with his defence.
But that's the whole problem, is it just keeps going back and forth and back and forth. The end result is you're guilty, get out, move on, get someone else new in.
But they need to have a radical overhaul of the entire system.
Correct. But they're not going to do that with having Sepp Blatter sitting there delaying the elections.
Yeah, he's been hanging out way too long.
Or Franz Beckenbauer.
Or Platini.
They're all alleged the smoke without fire type of scenario springs to mind there, you know?
Yeah. Well, FIFA does seem to be doing a good impression of Skynet in the Terminator movie. But anyway, that will take us to the end of part one. And if I could just say, I think Jack Warner would make a great FIFA president. But anyway, we'll be back with part two. And so here we are back with part two of the Beyond the 90 podcast, powered by One Shot Football. What a great new intro that is, even if I do say so myself. Now, in part two, we're going to discuss the state of reserve and youth team football in the UK. For those of you who have not been paying attention, there was a very, very good article on www.oneshotfootball.com this week by a young and up-and-coming writer called Steve McBain. I don't know if you've heard of him. Just discussing, you know, the need for B teams, for reserve teams. I mean, when I was researching this article, I went on Wikipedia. Other research websites are available, but and I tried to make head or tail of the league structure, and it is so fragmented between, you know, who's fielding reserve teams, between youth leagues. There seemed to be a fairly okay, you know, Premiership Reserve League that was running for a while, but I mean, this all ties back into the fact that England is not producing, you know, young players. I mean, guys, what needs to happen here? Or
for me, I think the problem is the Brits or English or however you want to call it, seem to think because the game was invented here that we don't need to learn from anyone. And in the old scheme of things, whenever you're starting a business, you want to follow a model that is already successful. If you look at the German League and the Spanish League, you know, as you point out, that run reserve B leagues, that is a model which has been successful and has proven to be successful, at least when you think of it since 2006 when the last World Cup was won by Italy. Since then, it's pretty much been the German and the Spanish leagues dominating.
So in the next two World Cups?
And probably the next two World Cups. But for me personally, I think it needs to be a bit of a mixture. It needs to be the reserve B leagues in the lower leagues like they do in Spain and Germany, but perhaps with the restriction on, and I'm going to say this loosely being a Scotsman, all foreigners apart from English players or under 23, and have a cap that way, which will then encourage teams to promote youth players through
the lower
leagues.
Well, I think, I mean, EU law would...
Yeah, restrict
it. Would include a lot of that, but I mean...
Oh, just a quick question. If England leaves EU, how that affects the league? Well, still we have to have the quotas.
Well, probably you'd be even worse. I mean, I can't imagine you'd be any better, but... I mean, the question is, I mean, for instance, like Chelsea have had a huge amount of criticism over the amount of players that they have out on loan, but there is no other way for these guys to get game time. I mean... What do we think is the answer? Do we think it's a structured under 21 competition, under 23 competition, you know, which maybe has, you know, access to say, you know, three overage players so players can get back to full fitness or whatever? Yeah. I mean, what do we think the answer is?
But following the German model, is it to do with money and the footballing associations getting behind the youth reserves?
I just think there's just a lack of organisation, yeah. Because these guys don't, I mean, the Premiership clubs just don't care. I mean, the German system is, they basically, effectively, the clubs have a B team which is allowed to go up to the third division, and then they just max out. I think in Spain, the only rule is that your team cannot be in the same division as your senior team. So if your team is in La Liga, you can only get into Liga Ladente, and therefore if your team's in Liga Ladente, you could only be in, I think it's League B1, B2, however it's set out. But I mean, as English football fans, as people who, you know, support, you know, football on a very, very sort of, you know, just the most basic level in the UK, how do you think people would feel about B teams being parachuted into the existing league structure? Would the fans accept that, or?
Well, you could do it in a way where you would not introduce new teams into the league. You could have like a farm league system like they do.
Conference.
Yes. Well, basically you have the bigger teams taking over the lesser division teams. I think the problem with the reserve league right now is nobody wants to play in a reserve league. You're either, you know, you're stepping into because you're injured, you're trying to get into the first league, and there's no team spirit, so you're not learning team spirit. Whereas when the German model and the Spanish model, you're actually playing for a team, so you feel much more a part of it.
Cup.
Yeah, and a real cup.
Just a question, in the German model and the Spanish model, how many international players are allowed to play in the second teams? Because you're looking to build the
English. It doesn't matter, if you're registered for that team, you play.
So then you could have 11 foreigners playing in your good team, which doesn't help the national team.
Well, for instance, who's the young Norwegian kid that signed for Real Madrid last year?
The 16-year-old?
Yeah, I mean, he's playing for, I think Zidane was managing the team, right? He's playing for them on Real Madrid. I think it's Real Madrid Castilla, it's called.
Okay.
So he plays for them. So you have to be they're registered like any other club. You can't just switch during the season. You have to be, I'm going to play for the B team this year.
Right, okay.
But there is the rule in Europe that, I mean, that, what is it, they call it a residential rule? That if you play for a country for 5 years or in the country for 5 years, you can actually switch nationality.
Or, and there's a lot of South American players that do that in Spain and Portugal. I mean, it's a very normal thing to do. I mean, one of the other questions I would have about having B teams in the existing league structure in, you know, for instance, in the English divisions, is that I don't know how much lower level football you've watched, but it's just not representative of the football that you watch in the Premiership. I mean, these guys are very fit. They're good professional players, but it's a very physical brand of football. It's not what you see at Premiership level. If you had a Premiership reserve league with Premiership teams putting out their reserve teams, they could play the same formations. they'd be playing a similar style of football and preparing their younger players for moving into the first team.
Yeah, and I think the younger players do need that experience. That's why we're overusing the loan system. So they do need to be in that competitive environment. So how are they going to break from the under-19s up to being in the Premier League first team? So, like, I was reading about the UEFA have a Champions League. So on the same day that Arsenal beat Bayern Munich, the under-19s also beat Bayern Munich. But it was just like a small game in Boreham Wood, like 100 people went to see it. So, you know, it is more about the practice. It's about being in front of an audience, practicing your skills, and playing for Thierry Henry as your manager. You know, it's
personally, I mean, you know, we've all sort of done sports at reasonable level, and I was thinking,
really,
yeah. I did schoolboys, played for Scotland, so I put my hand up there.
And what
there
was you go.
Rugby, football. Okay. We used to have this game called football. I don't know if they have it in Spurs, but we do have it.
Don't have it in Scotland.
But not next summer. But
I'll be on a nice beach somewhere. Yeah. Don't you worry about that. And the best thing as well is that I'll have three teams to support because, you know, we're England's group,
there.
Right?
So. Yeah, we're not there. I mean, all I wanted to say was that if you have it's the caliber that you play against and with.
Yeah.
It brings you on. If you play against your normal person beside it, squash or tennis or football or anything, you end up, you'll only be at that level when you end. Yeah. So you have to bring yourself up. That's why when you go on loan, the team should actually select teams where you'll improve so that when you come back, you're a better player than when you left. And that tends to be not the problem. They tend to get a player at 18, 19 and they shove them down two divisions and hope that it works. Because I think in certain leagues, maybe not necessarily in English Premiership, but they have this tendency not to loan them out to teams in the same league. Yeah. And all this sort of...
Well, there's a clear conflict, you know, there. It's something that I think, you know, people do get quite passionate about. I mean, Drew, I mean, you follow Scottish football a bit more closely than me nowadays. I mean, Scotland has the under-21 setup, right? How successful has it been? Or
I mean, if you go back historically, Scotland youth teams used to do historically very well. But the under-21 teams are usually, they have a under-21 Premier League team. And even though Rangers aren't in the Premier League, they still play in the Premier League team for the under-21s. And they have it's a very good setup. But it all boils down to the actual training methods. And I think the British society, British footballing mentality has been very poor to catch up with the Europeans. The Germans, the Dutch, even the Belgians have a better training system where when you're 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, these kids are actually training 4 or 5 nights a week. In the UK, it's 1 or 2 times a week. And until we actually change the mechanism by which to encourage the youth to play, we'll never ever reach the heights that Brazil, Spain, Germany and all that do, because we don't actually encourage the kids to go out and train for 1 hour every night.
But is it as well, I mean, is it, you know, if you take football in Britain, you know, England and Scotland, it's very, very parochial. And it's not so much about, you know, necessarily developing a player a certain age. I mean, even when I played, you know, in under-8s, under-10s, it was about winning that game.
Yeah.
Not about getting better and preparing you for life at the top. I mean, what would be better suited to bring, you know, there seems to be this brick wall for talent in the UK at about 18 years of age. I mean, they are trying to address, you know, the younger age groups that you've discussed, but what would be better for 18, 19 year olds? Would it be B teams in the existing league structure, you know, up against, you know, fully, you know,
well, at least then they'll get support.
Yeah.
I mean, right now, the reserve game, like Gazelle said, it was, what, 100 people show up to the game,
but
you're playing on a practice field?
Would you
field?
Be better with like an under-23 or an under-21 model where they're playing the type of football that they're going to play in the Premiership rather than playing grizzled old pros in Division 2 who have beaten the living daylights out of them because they happen to be from Manchester United? Or
yeah, but you're going to learn by playing the grizzled old pros, aren't you?
But for me, if you look at it the way Man U did it with the team of 92, etc., right, then we can't win it with kids. It's basically, if you go out and loan, you go out and loan as a single individual to play with a team that you'll probably never ever play for again 2 years later. And at least if you have a reserve B team, it's likely that most of that reserve B team you'll have played with 4 or 5 years later. The same guys will be playing, hopefully, if you're all good enough to play.
But United have done nothing with their youth system since.
But I'm only giving that as an example of you actually have a reserve team where you, each year, you develop with the same group of players. Your mindset is you know where the runs are, you know how they're going to play.
But why not make the reserve B team an actual club?
Yeah, exactly. The same as Spain, that's what I'm saying.
But then would, you know, I mean, bearing in mind the passion there is at, you know, real grassroots in the UK, would supporters from Crewe Alexander, Exeter City, Swindon Town, Spurs,
would.
I mean, all the small clubs, I mean, you know, would they accept having B teams parachuted in from the big, you know?
I'm not sure.
Not parachuted in. I think they become part of the.
No, how would you start a team?
At that point, I mean, and we mentioned this earlier, Steve, when we were talking off record, is who's going to support these B teams? I mean, if they're playing at Crewe Alexandra, a B Chelsea B team, who's going to drive all the way up there and support a Chelsea B team? Half of the players are unknown in a league that means nothing to them. I mean,
I'll give you an example.
Crewe Alexander, the B team.
I'll give you an example of who'll support them. When Rangers, Celtic, Man U, and all that used to play their youth teams on really poor nights in Glasgow, when the main team was away, you would have 5,000-10,000 people turn up at Rangers at Ibrox to watch the games. Now, what tends to happen is, especially Arsenal, Chelsea, Man City's, Man U's, for all the guys who cannot get a season ticket to go watch Man U but are Man U supporters or Tottenham supporters or Chelsea supporters or Arsenal supporters, they are supporters of the football club. They will go watch the under-19s play, the under-21s play. It might not be in the tens of thousands, but you'll probably get 2,000 or 3,000 fans going along to a North London game rather than travelling all the way up to Bradford because they can't get a ticket anyway. So they'll go watch the local team.
But the question I would ask is that are these B teams, you know, effectively taking away the identity of your, as I say, you know, your Tranmere Rovers, your all these teams? I mean, Lincoln Cities, Grimsby Town, all these.
It should promote their exposure, you know, and get more people to watch their games. I mean, we're talking about this on a club level. I mean, how will this influence the national team and the interest and the progression in proper competitions like the World Cup?
Yeah.
I mean,
for me, when you look at it, it's as long as they don't get parachuted in and they've seemed to have earned the right to play in the league.
So how would you start it, for instance?
Well, if you imagine you have the conference, so technically, and the way I think it would be probably agreeable to all parties, would actually be in a lower league, which would then go into the conference with maybe three teams going in, or expand the conference slightly.
I mean, presumably the Premiership could just push money down from the TV deal to say, look, we're going to fund, you could
increase the conference, right? This is logistics, this is not really sort of figuring it out, but say you say how many Premier League teams want to do this, and say six of them start off, so you increase the conference by six, right?
I disagree.
Now, if you just wait, and then as they progress up, then in 3, 4, 5 years time, another 4 or 5 will come in, and as they progress up and they follow the same pattern where you can't go above the Championship, or you can't go above the first division.
Not going to work.
You know? Why?
Because now we're getting competition. Now you can bring in new competition. I think Mr. McBain wrote it in his article. Now you bring in new competition against these clubs.
Someone like read it.
Against the Grimsby, against the Crewe Alexander, against the Bradford.
But that's the same.
All of a sudden they're in contest. What you do is you build from their grassroots they've already got. And you just say, okay, I'll tell you what, I am Man United, I'll take over Crewe Alexander, I'll give you an injection of money.
You can't do that because
Wimbledon.
Well,
you have,
you're going to be the feeder team, you're going to get our reserves, you're going to get quality players.
Then why don't you just go and loan six players to Crewe?
It's not you make Crewe your feeder team for your...
But that's what
we're talking about. We're talking about giving people
in New York,
who are in Man United's squad, who aren't getting playing time.
I actually think the
whole team to Crewe.
Yeah, but then I don't know how it works in Spain.
Why? No, but I'm saying you don't loan them. You make Crewe your feeder team. You make them your B team.
Yeah, but how do you
give
them
your,
back?
You give them, how, you give them training structure.
How does a, you know, for instance, a club like Crewe Alexandra with a proud history, Dario Gradi, who's produced so many great players, yeah. How do they feel about just being taken
well,
over by Manchester United?
They get an injection of
but then the club has lost all
well,
hope.
Identity. I'm not sure.
The club is losing identity because the club still becomes a Crewe.
But
they're still the same.
But what Crewe then is capped. I mean, all Crewe Alexandra fans, I mean, okay, I'm sure that as a Crewe Alexandra fan, you accept your lot in life to a degree. But how many Crewe fans have not dreamt of Dario Gradi, you know, in his time producing this wonderful team that they kept together, going through divisions, winning the European Cup? You know, that is gone. I mean, you are just, you are, you know, it's like being a vassal. I mean, it's...
Okay,
I just don't think just that they, knowing the passion of these, the fans of these clubs, I just don't see them accepting being
someone
a subsidiary of someone else.
Well, okay, then they can dream on and pretend that they're going to win the FA Cup.
But isn't hope and dreaming? But isn't hope and dreaming? You know, part of being a football fan. I mean, what is it? I mean, you could almost say there's no point in supporting Lincoln City or Crewe Alexandra. They're never going to win anything. But people still do it because they hope and they dream. And I sound a bit like I don't know what.
No, I know. I know what you're saying, but I think. I guess, you know.
You know what I think you're going with this? I think you want a north and south thing so you can have playoffs and a 7-game series.
Does that sound like American football?
Just a little. It sounds a little bit North American.
The actual reserve.
No, but we're talking about developing players and also too. And I think players, when they play for the reserve team, they don't develop.
Well, I think that's the key. I mean, what is?
I mean, they're playing for 100 people on a training ground. No one cares about the result. Who? I mean, I had no idea that Arsenal played Bayern in the reserve. No, all it cares is a training staff, but no fans are showing up.
But I think what's really interesting is
that you have to get the fans involved. You have to get the.
We're here talking about reserve league football. Look how much passion it's stirred already. People care about their clubs. You know, they really do.
But in terms of the national level, what can the FA do to change any of this? Because we're talking about the clubs.
But surely they're in charge. I mean,
they're not doing anything, are they?
They have to change it from the grassroots level, and that's
how can they support the clubs to do that?
For me, if
they're too busy trying to extricate themselves from supporting Michel Platini at the moment.
Yeah. Maybe they should hire Sepp Blatter.
If you think about it, if you look at what happened, there's this sort of like fictitious stories that go on about the British League and Rangers and Celtic coming in. They all fall down to the same thing as Rangers and Celtic would probably for a while benefit, and even though you can argue with
Sunderland,
they're
not good enough to get into
exactly.
Premier
League, but wait, I'm just explaining.
Okay.
That even if they went back into Division 4 or the Conference, you have to put two teams out.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. Now, which ones are the teams are going to drop out? Because they all have an equal vote. And the problem is, if you don't get I think it's a unanimous decision, then...
And it's turkeys voting for Christmas, right?
So you're not going to vote yourself out. So unless the philosophy is to increase the leagues, you're not going to get any new change. And that's what the problem is you have to actually say, right, okay, maybe we make it 24 or 22 for 10 years to allow B teams in to encourage, they create a national team where they say only English players can play, or only English players can play that are above 25, and then below that is whatever you, to develop the youth and the English team. Yeah. And then that way you can get it, you know?
Okay, well, look, you know, I think we've got to the crux of the issue a little bit. It's something that will rumble on, and you know, I think as Gazella said, we'd like to see the FA take some leadership. Any kind of structure would be good.
Can I just say that Blatter will be free after February if the FA?
No, because they keep extending.
He is probably him and Jack Warner is the dream team to sort out the preserve. So the Premiership Reserve League. Now I'm just a little bit conscious of time, so that will take us to the end of part two, and then we'll be back with part three with the weekend previews. So here we are back with the final part of today's pod, part three, the Beyond the 90 podcast, powered by One Shot Football. It's such a great new intro, I'm just in love with it. But anyway, here we are, we've got the weekend previews, and as I say, we're just going to look at a few of the games that we think might be a little bit more interesting. Villa, Swansea. Jeremy, is this a must-win for Sherwood?
This is a must-win for Sherwood. Villa hanging down at 19th at the moment with one win all season. Swansea aren't on the best of runs, but I mean, Villa's form has been appalling. Tim Sherwood.
Mate, I saw them last week at Stamford Bridge, and mate, they were so bad they made Chelsea look good.
Even if Villa beats Swansea at the weekend, I think Sherwood's gone. I mean, there's no way they're going to beat Spurs.
There's a lot of talk of David Moyes coming in.
There's talk of David Moyes, there's talk of Brendan Rodgers, there's talk of everybody coming in. I mean, whenever there's going to be a vacant space, all the managers who aren't working are talked about. And Moyes is experienced in Spain, even. I get the country right. Isn't going as well as he obviously planned.
We were looking at these managerial changes for a second. I just wonder with Villa if Sam Allardyce might have been better waiting a couple of weeks before taking the Sunderland job.
Well suited at Sunderland, I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
Who's got a better? I mean, has Sunderland got the better squad? I don't know.
They got Jermaine Defoe.
Well, there you go, an ex-Spurs player. Anyway, so I think, you know, it's actually a pretty important game for both teams.
Villa haven't beaten Swansea in the last three games. Not scored against Swansea in the last two.
Jeremy with another stat attack.
Steve. No more 5-week bans, okay? I think Swansea will win, and I think Sherwood's on his last race.
So you're going for an away win?
Yeah.
Gazella?
Well, look what happened to Aston Villa last season. I mean, Sherwood came in to rescue them from relegation, and then he got them to the FA Cup final, and now look at them. So I think they're going to lose.
Yeah. But is it Sherwood's fault? I mean, they sold some pretty big players, right?
Well, they lost the three best players.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the three best.
So I mean, you lose your three best players, and you're a mid-table team. I mean,
but at the same time, we're not friends of Tim Sherwood on this board. So let's kick a man while he's down. Rick, what's the result?
I call this one a draw.
No ties.
It's a draw. I've been beaten up, and it's a draw.
I tend to agree. One of the things I've noticed we do here on this pod is we predict an inordinate amount of away wins, and statistics will tell you that we are not correct. But anyway, I will go for a draw. Drew?
Swansea, every day of the week.
Wow, so there we go.
The money ball tactics of Aston Villa is going to fall back and hit them in the arm.
All right. Well, you can carry on. And I didn't hear a thing.
No.
Anyway, Leicester Palace. Drew?
Oh, Leicester Palace. This is what I like.
This could be the best game of the weekend, I think.
It could be.
This is two minnows, which are now up in the...
Minnows?
Two alleged minnows, although the supporters of those clubs will hate me for it. Rangers and Celtic. And they are up in the stratosphere doing very, very well. And long may it continue. I mean, if you think about Vardy, I mean, he's a schoolboy dream. 4 years ago, he's playing Conference with Fleetwood Town.
And doesn't he have a criminal record as well?
I think he does. I think he played with Tottenham and the schoolboys, so he's obviously got one in. But no, I mean, I think if you think about 23, 24, he's playing Conference League. 28, he's playing England. I mean, that's every person who
ever thought. I think the last two guys to do anything like that were Ian Wright and Stuart Pearce. I think Stuart Pearce was playing for Wealdstone, I think.
And I mean, if you think about that, when you think your career's over when you hit your 20s, especially striking or whatever, you've just got to look at this guy.
I think Stuart Pearce, he only actually got into the Premier League just because of the size of his thighs.
But I mean, see, when you think about it, the guy, Vardy, he scored 9 goals this season.
As for Leicester, really cool.
For Leicester, and something like six.
Just wrecked my first quiz question.
6 or 7 in his last five. It is just absolutely phenomenal. Well, I'll get one for that. And
I'm actually going to declare a winner today.
Yeah, I think that Leicester are by far doing better than Palace, and the table shows that. But I like Alan Pardew as a manager. I think Pardew's learnt a lot from down in his.
But I mean, this game, Palace seem better suited to playing away from home, like a lot of teams do. Let's cut to the chase. What do we think here? Who's going to win?
I'm going for a draw. I think what will happen is Palace will go 2-0 up, unless they'll come back and draw 2-2 like they normally do.
Yeah, last week.
Yeah, and every other week.
Yeah. Jeremy,
I'm going for a Leicester win. They've only lost one game this season. Palace actually lost 4. Leicester at home. Although Leicester haven't beaten Palace in the last 4 meetings.
Another snap! Hey! He slept with his notes under the pillow, didn't he?
That's why he was late.
Only lost to Arsenal this season, which was a very close game and very unlucky.
5-2.
That's what I said. Yeah, Leicester win for me.
Okay, Leicester win. Gazella?
I think Crystal Palace are going to win.
Rick?
I really like Pardew.
Yeah, Rick?
And what he's done at Palace.
I agree. I think Palace is going to win. I think Leicester just concede too many goals. And I think they're way punching above their weight. And Crystal Palace is going to do them.
All right. Well, I'm going to sit on the fence here and go for a draw. Now, West Ham Chelsea. I don't know if you've
heard.
Are we actually writing these down?
Yeah. Hammers win. Hammers win.
Right, let's move on.
All you have to do is download the show, and you know you'll be able to hear them again in all their glory. Now, West Ham Chelsea. I mean, Slaven Bilic came out and has been glowing, effusive in his praise for Jose Mourinho. For me, I think this is. Chelsea, every single game for Chelsea is their biggest game of the season until they start winning game after game after game. They beat Villa, but Villa were just, I mean, turgid is not even a strong enough word. They had a draw in Kiev. Mourinho called the referee chicken. Did you get it? Yeah, chicken, Kiev. Yeah, pretty good.
It's bad when you have to tell you.
But you know, I think
you have to explain it.
West Ham have been, well, it depends on your audience, right? West Ham have been great away from home. I mean, I think Bilic has you know, he's done a good job.
They even beat Arsenal.
Yeah. I think a point here for Chelsea would be a good result, Jeremy. I think a point would be a good result for Chelsea here.
I do as well.
I'm going to go for a draw here. Drew?
Stat
attack.
West Ham only won one of their last 18 games against Chelsea in all competitions. So it's a big call saying West Ham are going to win. But with the turmoil at Chelsea at the moment, I think the Hammers will put it off.
Okay, so you went for a home win for it.
Highest scores in the Premier League this season, West Ham. Chelsea have conceded the third most goals, I think.
As you will see, Jeremy has full use of the internet. Now, the main thing is here that Jeremy's called a home win. I've gone for a draw. Drew, we're just going round
I'm going to go for the Hammers, mainly because Moreno seems to be spending more time, Mourinho seems to be more time sort of dissing his players. He's sort of badmouth Hazard again, saying that he's not really playing up to scratch, whether he is or not. Last season it worked great for him. This year, because Real Madrid are around the horizon.
So a home win for you, yeah?
Definitely.
Anyway, Drew, we'll look forward to having you on the show again in April. Gazella?
I'm going to back the Hammers as well.
Oh, my God.
Chelsea is still in free fall. I think Moo has probably lost the dressing room.
Yes, I think
Mourinho.
Rick, I'm relying on you for some sense and perspective here.
Well, it's going to be a draw, and it's going to be ugly, and it's going to be boring, and it's going to be silly. So it's going to be a draw, and an ugly draw for Chelsea is a good result. And
that is, I mean, that I think tells you a lot about Chelsea at the moment. We've asked five people for a prediction, and not one has said a Chelsea win. I think that is really quite telling, all jokes aside. Now, Arsenal, Everton. The Gunners are on a roll. Everton flattered to deceive. I mean, is this surely a home banker, Gazella?
Absolutely. We've got to get 3 points out of this, and we're in amazing form. The confidence of beating a small team like Bayern Munich.
One of the things I would just say though is that the, I mean, what was Bayern's possession stats the other night?
It was 69% to Bayern Munich.
Chasing the ball around that much and pressing a team that has the ball is very, very tiring.
Oh, stats
from that game, Bayern Munich completed 765 passes to Arsenal's 278.
Yeah, okay, but we're talking
that
about
is,
Arsenal.
Yeah, but difference.
Thank you, Jeremy.
You're welcome.
Yeah, that's true. Everton are on
a win.
They just beat. They just lost to Man United.
They're also a team that like a lot of possession.
That's true, but then we've shown that we can play those teams and still win. I think we're on a
for the first time in a long time.
You know, we're showing different qualities now.
Well, I think the thing is that I think Wenger, for me, has finally given up his obsession of trying to be Barcelona, and the only manager I just can't stand, who I think is even worse than him at just aping these teams, is Martinez. I just I find him the
you
biggest.
You don't like him, do you?
I really
why?
Don't like
why?
Him.
Why?
Because he's just a managerial charlatan. I have to put up with journalists saying things like he even looks like he smells nice. They're so in love with this guy. I mean,
he does
look like
that. You just can't get away from it.
I think the gloss has run out a bit with him at Everton, because when he first got there, he did keep them up, and he did introduce a more exciting style of play. But I think, you know,
he's got Ross Barkley playing well.
That's true, and he's the biggest threat when we play at the weekend. But I still think the confidence is going to be running so high. We've beat three teams on the trot in three different ways. You know, United, Watford.
I think it must be very exciting for you.
2-0.
It is.
5-2.
You beat United and you're so happy with that.
I'll tell you what
United in the first 20 minutes. We could have scored six goals in that game.
I'll tell you what
what was the possession?
I'll tell you what I think is.
Yeah,
but I'll tell you what I think is really key for Arsenal at the moment is I think they finally found a way to harness Mesut Ozil, who I think could arguably be the best player, you know, in the division. I think he really is that good.
I think particularly playing Theo up front as well. That's something that's
I'm not sure about that. I mean, he's grown a beard, so he looks a bit more manly. But anyway, let's get some predictions. Home win for you, Gazzella?
Absolutely.
Rick?
Yeah, I feel... Yeah, Arsenal's going to win this one. They're just on a good roll. And Everton, as well as I think they're playing, they're not getting the results, and it's just going to be an Arsenal
win. A home win for you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, home win as well. Drew?
I'm going to go for a draw. I think Arsenal don't like the physical side, and Everton have been that all the time. So I reckon that Everton will get a draw out of it. 1-1. Ross Barkley.
You must be Everton fire, right?
I mean, as a fan, I have to go for the draw.
You're going for the draw. Okay, well now, moving on to the Tynemere derby. I mean, Allardyce, the stars are lined up. The last three Sunderland managers who've come in have lost their first game, I think, and then beaten Newcastle in the Tynemere derby.
And Sunderland have beaten Newcastle 5 on the bounce, so the stars are definitely aligned. Did I get a Statoil in before Statoil?
No, I have no interest in this match, so no stats from me.
No stats from you at all. Okay, well, I mean, I don't think it's going to be one for the purists necessarily, but what are we thinking here, Drew? I mean,
Sunderland
to win, Jeremy?
Yeah. This is a must-win game for Sunderland. I mean, if they don't win this game...
But it might be, but I mean, are they going to win? That's the
question. I don't think so. I mean, Newcastle beating Norwich last week has given them confidence. I think it'll be a draw, which is the worst result for both teams.
Yeah,
I think Sunderland are going to win. They've been dining out and getting new managers in and giving them a real boost. So I think Allardyce is going to work his magic. And
I think it's going to be a draw. I was very surprised with Newcastle's victory last week, and it's just going to be a draw.
How many draws have you gone for?
No, I called.
They set up ties this week.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's. I have to say that I'm on the fence again. I think neither team is going to be able to come up with a go-ahead score. And I think this will be a tie. I actually think Newcastle have got the better players. I like Wijnaldum. I like this Mitrovic up front. I mean, they've got some good players. They've also got some terrible players. I think Allardyce will slowly galvanise Sunderland, but I think it's going to be slowly. And this should be good enough for a draw, but probably not one for the purists. But Rick, United City, the Manchester derby. I mean, these are two favourites for the title. I mean, the one thing I would say this week is that United they're at home, but they've had a trip to Eastern Europe, and you know, City had a galvanising win against Sevilla.
Well, City is the team to beat right now, but my boys, United, are going to come through and they're going to win this game. City's just got too many injuries. You know, they're six short, and now companies.
But you do have Michael Carrick, so.
Yeah. No, but we do have Michael Carrick, but we were now starting to play well. We did a very convincing defeat over Everton. Midweek, okay, it was a little cold in Moscow. We don't like the cold weather, no problem. Manchester Derby.
It's a bit like playing at Green Bay.
Rooney's finally going to step up and take responsibility. He likes to score against City with his, you know, classic overhead kick from years ago. 3-1.
Funny you should mention that, but anyway, okay, Rick, can we get a prediction?
Yes, 3-1 Man U.
3-1 Manchester United. I'm going to go for United win as well, although the European results nagging me, but I'm going to go for United win.
Enough said, United.
City.
Boom!
Since City got flashed by Spurs 4-1, they have gone the offensive. They have scored now 17 goals in 5 games. They are going to hammer Man U. 3-0 City.
I think City are going to win, and I'm agreeing with a Spurs fan. This feels really
odd. That's not very often.
It's just been a pod of first.
I can feel love in the air.
Exactly.
Actually, there was no physical violence. That's pretty good.
Now, anyway, we've been with a little bit over time today, but we just have time for our weekly quiz. Just time to squeeze that in.
And what do we win?
You win another opportunity to appear on the pod.
If you get the rest.
Now, unfortunately, Drew just, you know, he had to ruin that. Things. Yeah, I mean, question one, how many Premiership goals has Jamie Vardy scored?
Nine.
1 point to Drew. Now,
6 in his last 5.
Now, but can you name all the clubs in the Premiership that he has scored more goals than?
Liverpool
is one.
Spurs.
Sunderland
is another one.
Arsenal.
No.
How many clubs total?
One club is level with them, by the way. Bonus point if you can get that right.
Newcastle.
No.
Nope.
Bournemouth.
They got 6 last week, remember?
Norwich.
Yeah.
Bournemouth.
You're all just guessing now.
Yeah, we are. Found out.
Okay, Stoke are level with